Radio and Rattling Up Sports Line.
RattleAndHumSports.com presents the Rattle and Hum Sports Podcast.
Off the screen, gets the pass, shot clock at 7. Nowitzki against Hercules, back in, falling away, puts it up, bangs it in! Oh, what a tough shot from Nowitzki! And the Mavericks take a 2-point lead with 5.9 remaining.
RattleAndHumSports.com, the number one site for sports, entertainment, and anything that we find interesting. And now, your host of the Rattle and Hum Sports Podcast, Brian Houston.
Hey ho, and welcome. Nice to be back. It's been a while, and I am Brian Houston. This is Rattle and Hum Sports Live. And we are glad to have you with us. If you'd like to call in and talk about some of the Cowboys off-season things that are going on, the number is 646-721-9997. With us, as always, when we do these, and hopefully we'll do these on a much more regular basis now that we're getting the band back together, Matthew Poston's covering the Dallas Cowboys for RattleAndHumSports.com. Matthew, how are you?
I'm fine, Brian. How are you?
Doing well. Been a long time. Good to talk to you again. And we've missed a lot of things since we last talked, namely the Cowboys winning a playoff game and then losing a playoff game in very bizarre fashion. And then all that went on afterwards with the offseason. I guess of all the things that went on, the two biggest stories of this offseason were the loss of DeMarco Murray to the Philadelphia Eagles in free agency and the signing earlier this week of Greg Hardy, the free agent outside linebacker slash defensive end. Would you agree or disagree there?
No, I think I would agree there. I mean, I think the franchise tagging of Dez Bryant is up there, but I think a lot of people expected that to happen given that there really wasn't a whole lot of negotiating that went on between the Cowboys and his agents leading up to the franchise tag deadline. So I think a lot of people expected that. I would agree. Losing Murray to the Eagles, which obviously hurt Cowboys fans a great deal, hurt their feelings more than anything else, and then signing a guy who just a month ago it looked like might not even be able to play in the NFL because he was undergoing an appeal for a assault and battery conviction that has since been overturned because the accuser did not show up in court for the appeal. Certainly those two stories qualify as the biggest of the offseason thus far for the Cowboys.
Well, let's take the most recent one first because it's the one that's being discussed the most right now, and that is the signing of Greg Hardy. It has received a ton of national scrutiny. Hardy, again, you know, with the NFL's attack on domestic abuse and violence and some of the most horrendous commercials you've ever seen during this past season, for the Cowboys to make this move is pretty risky in terms of PR. But at the same time, Jerry Jones has said this week that you know, sometimes you have to make these kind of moves if your main job is to try to win football games. So, give your assessment on the signing of Greg Hardy.
Yeah, you know, if this were just a pure football signing, I think everybody would be standing up and applauding the Cowboys signing Greg Hardy. Of course, if this were just a standard football situation, Greg Hardy wouldn't be coming to the Dallas Cowboys. He'd be somewhere else. He'd probably still be in Carolina. And that's why this becomes such a polarizing story, because really the only reason Greg Hardy's in Dallas is because the Cowboys are the only team that would touch him. After everything that happened last year, missing 15 games, You know, everything that he dealt with in court over the past year. You know, there are about half of the teams in the league, reportedly, according to one report from, I think, Adam Schefter, ESPN, half the teams in the league didn't want anything to do with them. So the Cowboys rolled the dice, pick it up. And from a financial standpoint, it's not a very risky deal for them because a lot of it's pay for play. He's going to get a veteran minimum base salary. He's going to get about $1.9 million in a workout bonus, which should be easy for him to get. And then the rest of it's going to be based on the number of games he plays and the number of sacks he puts up. And all of that is tied to the fact that there's a possibility, a distinct possibility, I think, that he'll get a suspension from the NFL under the domestic violence policy that was instituted last fall, a suspension that could be up to 6 games. I don't think it will be 6 games. I think it'll be more in the neighborhood of 3 or 4 after you go through the appeals process. But, you know, this contract for the Cowboys doesn't carry a lot of risk because it's 1 year and because it's incentive-laden. Now, if he reaches all the incentives in his contract somehow, you're talking about $11 million. If he does all that, the Cowboys are probably going to have a pretty darn good season on the field, and Jerry Jones won't mind moving some money around to accommodate that. But in terms of the type of contract they put together, it's low risk for them, and it reflects the situation that Greg Hardy's in right now.
Let me ask you this, Matthew. Had the Cowboys not lost at least 5 players in free agency, would they have considered adding Greg Hardy at that point if they had not lost Justin Durant and Bruce Carter and George Selby and some of those guys?
I don't think that would have had a bearing, actually, because you're talking about an elite-level pass rusher, a guy who has produced at an elite level consistently in the NFL. Those players are pretty rare to find, whether it's in the draft or free agency. They're almost a requirement in the NFL if you're going to rush the passer consistently and put a lot of pressure on the opposing offense with your defense. You've pretty much got to have a guy like that if you want to reach that level. So even if they had kept Durant, even if they had kept a couple of those other guys, I still firmly believe Hardy would have been of interest to them in that situation. So I don't think that had a lot of bearing at all, honestly.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about some of these guys that were lost in free agency. I guess, first of all, DeMarco Murray, obviously the biggest loss on the team and the one that hurts the most, not only because they lose him, but they lose him to the Philadelphia Eagles, who God knows what Chip Kelly's trying to do up there right now. But how big of a loss is that for the Cowboys? And I realize that we don't know who they've got, you know, stepping in for him next year, other than Darren McFadden coming in. And I think you probably would agree with me right now that McFadden is a huge question mark.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We can talk about the running back situation a little bit. But losing Murray is significant, but it's also the kind of the chicken and egg debate. And we're going to find out this fall, was it the offensive line or was it the running back? Everybody talks about how this offensive line is one of the best in the game, and I think they are. But Murray certainly had a hand in the kind of production they put up as a running game last year. So when you think about Joseph Randall, when you think about Darren McFadden, when you think about Lance Dunbar, when you think about Ryan Williams, when you think about the running back that I think they're likely to draft early in the draft next month, you're going to see them run a lot of different components behind that offensive line in training camp and in preseason. And we're going to find out if this offensive line really is the larger reason why DeMarco Murray had such a huge year last year. I think the impact of his loss is really going to be tied to how well they're able to produce on the field in 2015 when it comes to running the football. I think when you look at total yardage, I don't know that the Cowboys are going to rush for as many total yards as they did in 2014, but that doesn't mean they can't have an effective running game because, as we've talked about before, it's all about yards per carry. It's not about total yards over the course of the season. It's about getting 4, 4.5 yards of carry so you can put your offense in better positions on second down and third down, expand your playbook, and try to do more things. The last thing you want is just to grind away first and 10 and then that's second and 9. You want to move the football 3 or 4 yards a carry. And if the Cowboys can do that, then I think the impact of losing Murray is going to be minimized.
All right. Then of the guys that we look at another guy that was a rather surprising loss, well, maybe not so surprising, but the one that may be of a more of an impact to the Cowboys than people suspect, and that would be Dwayne Harris going to the New York Giants. Harris made tremendous contributions on a lot of areas there on the football team.
Yeah, there aren't many players in football, I think, that could do what Dwayne Harris has done the past couple of years. It would be enough of a loss when you consider the fact that he returned kickoffs and punts for 2 years for this team. But he was also one of their best special teams coverage guys. I mean, he was on every special teams unit as an offensive and as a defensive player. I think he came close to leading this team in special teams tackles, I think, in 2013. That's a very impactful loss. Now, there are ways to overcome that sort of thing. I think the Cowboys will have some guys in play to return kicks. Lance Dunbar could certainly help them in that regard. I think the bigger loss is going to be on coverage because his ability to get downfield quickly, break down, and make tackles, you've got to find a guy, maybe two guys, that can do that for you. So you're not going to miss him much on offense because he didn't do a whole lot. I mean, he gave you a couple of decent catches over the course of the year, but you really miss him on special teams. And that's part of the reason why the Cowboys simply couldn't afford him. The Giants came at him and paid him like a guy who's going to be a component in their passing game in 2015, whereas the Cowboys, I don't think, were going to be able to do that.
Who are they going to use as return men, the Cowboys, now?
Well, Dunbar, I think, is a leading candidate. He's done it before. I think you can look at a guy like Ryan Williams, Morris Claiborne, if you could ever keep him healthy. I think he has that ability. I think it's probably more likely the Cowboys are going to entertain players off the free agent market, whether it be undrafted free agents or maybe take a wide receiver late that has that ability. There are guys like Dukes, Jamison Crowder, who could be had in the fourth or fifth round, who could help you in the passing game, have been highly productive in the passing game, but can also help you as a return guy. I don't think there are going to be any shortage of candidates. I think Devin Street could help you there too, the second-year wide receiver out of Pitt. So you're going to see them run a lot of guys in and out of there during workouts, during training camp, as they try to figure out what combination of guys is going to give them the best opportunity to make an impact on kickoff returns and punt returns.
And one name that you didn't mention, but I've seen in articles here just recently, is the idea of Cole Beasley either returning kickoffs or punts.
Yeah, he certainly has that ability. I think especially on punts, he's returned some punts before. He's not a guy you look at as a breakaway speed guy like Harris was, but he's certainly sure-handed enough and smart enough to know where to find the right creases to move the ball upfield.
All right, and then we take a look at these defensive losses. When you look at it, you look at sheer numbers, and you think about a defense that was shaky and played way over their heads most of the year last year, and yet were exposed in the NFC loss to the Green Bay Packers by a one-legged quarterback who could barely move, but just picked them apart the whole day. How much did the Cowboys really lose in losing guys like Durant, Carter, Henry Melton, Sterling Moore, Selby? How much did they really lose?
I don't know that they lose that much in combination with those guys. Just because, with the exception, I think, of probably Melton, they're just guys. I mean, Selby's a nice player, but he has a ceiling. You know, half a dozen sacks a year. Even Melton, I think, at this point in his career, he has a ceiling. Sterling Moore has a ceiling. All those guys have a ceiling, and I think they're close to it as players. So they're not necessarily guys who I think are going to go somewhere and have a huge career. I think the one guy on defense that they lost that's really going to hurt, and I don't think anybody feels it yet, is Durant, the linebacker. He was great for them when he was on the field last year before he got hurt. He can play inside. He can play outside. He understood the scheme. He was a great fit for it. He was the one guy on the defensive side that I thought to myself when he signed with Atlanta that Cowboys are really going to miss him They have 12 linebackers on their roster right now. And outside of Sean Lee, and you could maybe make a case for Anthony Hitchens, I'm not sure anybody else on that roster from a linebacker standpoint is better than Durant. And they're going to have to find at least a couple of guys that can give them what Durant gave them last year if they're going to be successful on that second level of the defense.
And then let's talk about the guys that they brought in who are about as unknown as the guys who left, unless you're just, you know, a bona fide a draftnik or a football fantasy guy or somebody like that. I got to tell you, I know zero about Jasper Brinkley or Andrew Gakbar or Gakkar or whatever he is. These are guys that no one's ever heard of.
Yeah, you know what? You know, aside from Greg Hardy, obviously, and then you've got Darren McFadden as well. You're right. Those guys are really not household names in that regard. Gakbar is a nice pickup just from the standpoint of he's played in 4-3 schemes before. He can play in the middle. He's got a little upside in that he's young. He's been productive. He just hasn't been a starter on a regular basis. The Keith Rivers signing, which happened just before free agency began, is interesting because at one time Keith Rivers was a top 10 selection in the NFL draft, and he never really panned out, never really became what people thought he was going to become. And, you know, you think to yourself, well, that kind of sounds like a linebacker the Cowboys had last year, Rolando McClain. And maybe they're hoping lightning will strike twice. A lot of their signings in free agency were all about being cost conscious and finding players that were good fits for what they do on either side of the football. It's been very clear throughout free agency that the Cowboys were not willing to break the bank for anybody. They weren't even willing to break open the piggy bank to sign Dez Bryant to a multi-year contract. They have franchise tagged him, and they seem very comfortable leaving him there for right now. So, you know, aside from the Greg Hardy deal, which right now they haven't broken the bank to keep him, they're not interested in spending a lot of money. I think it's for a couple of reasons. One, they've become better at identifying talent in the draft the past couple of years. They've done a better job there. And two, they know they have a lot of money coming off the books after 2015. About 20-something million in dead money comes off the books after the 2015 season. They're going to have more money to spend next year in a free agency than this year. So I think their logic is one more year, find that right mix of guys that can fit your scheme and give you something and get some impact guys in the draft and try to bring these guys together one more year, you know, keep the chemistry experiment going, have some success, and then you might seem to spend some decent money in 2016.
Okay, and then, of course, the Cowboys signed a couple of fullbacks because, after all, that was a huge need.
I don't know. I mean, at least both of these guys have some experience in the NFL. Not that Tyler Klutz did much of anything last year. I mean, he was a nice lead blocker, and he caught a couple of passes for them. But I was amazed they signed one new fullback. I was blown away they signed two. They can help you a little bit on special teams, too, so I think you got to look at it from that standpoint as well. But one of them is not making the final roster. That's for certain.
Now, the guys that are still left out there for the Cowboys to sign of their own lineup, the biggest names to me, well, the biggest name as far as I'm concerned, is Rolando McClain. What's the status of that situation with the Cowboys and McClain?
It doesn't sound like they've had a conversation in a while. Early in free agency, they were talking about how they were, you know, talking back and forth. But there hasn't been a whole lot of chatter recently. And it leads one to believe that maybe there is more to this four-game fine that Rolando McClain sustained just before free agency began than we thought. As you know, they changed the drug policy, the substance abuse policy last year to reflect that if a player got a third strike, instead of getting a four-game suspension, they would get a four-game fine. And then their next violation would result in a four-game suspension. So he was popped for the four-game fine in March, just before free agency began. And he really hasn't gotten a nibble from anybody. That's what leads me to believe there's something more to this. Because it's not just the Cowboys that don't seem to be kicking the tires on Rolando McClain. It's everybody. Everybody seems to be ignoring him right now. It's really interesting. Nobody's really talked about why these teams aren't paying attention to him. McClain's not talking. His agent, Bill Johnson, hasn't said a whole lot. It's a very strange dynamic right now, because I think the Cowboys would like to have him, but there's obviously something that's not – there's obviously something they're not comfortable with, and I don't know if it's health. You know, McClain obviously had some injury issues last year, or if there's something more related to this positive violation of the substance abuse policy than we realize. And by the way, we don't know what he was popped for. We have no idea what exactly he was taking that violated the policy. So that's another piece of it as well.
All right, and then the other guy, you know, Anthony Spencer's out there. I know the Cowboys would like to keep him, but they're not going to break the bank to keep him. What's the situation there?
I know he's had conversations with the Seahawks and the Saints at this point. In fact, I think he had a visit with the Saints yesterday. So he's actively looking at a couple of different teams. Doesn't necessarily mean that he's going anywhere. But the Cowboys only have about $1.5 million under the cap right now. And Spencer will probably command about $1 million in base salary. So if you're the Cowboys, that pretty much puts you right up against the ceiling in terms of your cap money. And, oh, don't forget, you have seven players to sign when it comes time to draft in late April and early May. So the odds are not looking very good that Anthony Spencer will be back in a Cowboys uniform in 2015.
Okay, and of the rest of the guys that are out there that are still unsigned, any of these that you're concerned just aren't going to sign with the Cowboys?
Not really. I mean, Spillman's a nice player for special teams, but he really didn't give you much when it came to his actual defensive position. I don't think he showed a lot of progress in that regard last year. So I don't think he's on their radar right now unless they can just get him for the minimum. And nobody else seems to be interested in him right now. So he very well could be back in a Cowboys uniform at some point. But the Cowboys are in no rush to bring him back.
Okay, and then looking at the players that the Cowboys were able to hang on to, obviously Dez Bryant, the lead name there, and that got complicated, and that probably was the reason that Cowboys weren't able to hang on to DeMarco Murray. What's the situation there, and how is it going to be, how is Dez going to behave playing on a one-year contract with the franchise tag slapped on it?
Well, that's a good question, because he hasn't said anything since the franchise tag came out. The Cowboys are expressing optimism that, A, they can get a deal done with him before the July 15th franchise tag deadline. By July 15th, you can agree to a multi-year contract with the team that tags you, or you play 2015 on the current franchise tag. At the same time, though, Jerry Jones said today, you know, we're not in a huge rush to do this, because we think the franchise tag is obviously a reward for a player, because they get paid the average of the top five players to the position. Dez Bryant's going to get about $11.5 million this year. That sounds great. Well, there's no security for him beyond this year. And, in fact, the Cowboys can tag him again next year, give him a 20% raise, which gets him to about $15 million. Jerry Jones made an interesting point today, and I don't necessarily agree with him on this. He said the market for young receivers has not been set yet. And he made the point that Demaryius Thomas was also tagged with the franchise tag. He made the point that players like Julio Jones and A.J. Green have not gotten to their second contract yet as a reason for why this long-term deal hasn't happened yet. And I have to disagree with Jerry on that one, because I'm sorry, the market has been set for a guy like Dez Bryant. He's a top five receiver in this league. He may be the second best receiver in the league behind Calvin Johnson. This is not a hard deal to make. Calvin Johnson makes about close to $50 million in guaranteed money. Mike Wallace, who has the number number two contract out there, makes $30 million in guaranteed money. Find a number somewhere in the middle in guaranteed money that you're comfortable with, and get Dez Bryant into a 6 or 7 year contract, which I think is what everybody wants on both sides of the deal, and be done with it. I mean, for Jerry to sit there and say the market hasn't been set yet is just kind of ludicrous, because the market is already set, because Dez Bryant, to me, is already better than guys like Demaryius Thomas and A.J. Green and Julio Jones. So from that standpoint, I don't agree with Jones on that one at all. As far as how Dez Bryant behaves, I got to be honest with you, I think he does behave, because he's done nothing in the last 2 years to lead us to believe that he won't. You know, he's kept his nose clean. He hasn't had any problems off the field. He seemed to handle the whole franchise tagging thing okay, even though he didn't say much about it beforehand. Jerry Jones seems to be optimistic that Bryant will be there for voluntary workouts. We'll find out in a month if that's the case or not. But I don't think this is going to be a huge deal, because I think Bryant has shown over the last couple of years that he's a much more mature player than he was when he came in the league.
Hope you're right. Now, the thing that I've seen recently, Brandon Carr comes up. Everybody assumed that Cowboys were going to go after Brandon Carr, try to get him to take a cut and pay. He did not have a great season this past year. His agent has said in the last 24 hours that they are not going to take a cut and pay from the $8 million to make this year. So is that just posturing, or do you think he's digging in his heels? And if he does, what do the Cowboys do?
Well, it could be. Stephen Jones said earlier this week at the owners' meeting that they have actually not asked Brandon Carr to take a pay cut. Carr's contract is pretty toxic this year when you consider how he's produced. He counts about $12 million against the salary cap this year. And you really can't cut him, because the dead money, you don't get any relief. It's all dead money if you cut him at this point. Sure, they can ask him to do what Doug Free did and reduce the amount of his contract by giving him more guaranteed money over the next 2 years. That worked out pretty well for Doug Free. He ended up getting a new contract out of it. They could also just sit on Brandon Carr's deal this year and wait until next year to cut him if that's what they want to do. It's a much more cap-friendly cut next year before the 2016 season. They'd save about, I think they'd save $6 million, and they'd have to accept $7 million in dead money, and they could even make him a June 1 cut and defer that, split that dead money out over 2 years. So they've got options in that regard, but one thing you have to keep in mind for the Cowboys, you don't have a lot of leverage here because you don't have a lot of depth at that position. When you think about it, Morris Claiborne may not be ready for training camp. Orlando Scandrick is your best corner. And then I don't know from there. The Cowboys don't have a whole lot of leverage here when it comes to Brandon Carr. They could go to him, ask him to take a pay cut. Carr could say no, and the Cowboys could just say, well, okay, we need him that much, so we'll just eat the contract this year.
All right, let's start looking in the crystal ball to the future here. I guess the bottom line is the main question everybody wants to know is this Cowboys team right now, is this Cowboys team going to be able to match or surpass what they did this past year? Is this Cowboy team going to actually be able to compete for a Super Bowl right now? That's the question everybody asks. Maybe impossible to answer. What's your answer?
Well, I don't think they've done a whole lot to hurt themselves in terms of their division. And I'll tell you why. And I think a lot of it has to do with what the Philadelphia Eagles have done. Chip Kelly is insane. I think that's the only way to put it. Every good piece that Andy Reid left him on offense is gone now. Every piece. And now you got DeMarco Murray, and you got Sam Bradford, and you got a bunch of guys at wide receiver. No offense to Riley Cooper, but a bunch of guys basically at wide receiver right now. They're not getting better, in my opinion. I mean, Murray helps them, but they're not getting better in free agency. The Giants have done some nice things, but I don't think they've elevated themselves, and neither have the Redskins. So when you think about it, everybody has at the worst held serve, except for the Eagles, whom I think have taken a bit of a step back. So if you're thinking about it, winning your division title gets you into the playoffs. I think the Cowboys are still in a very good position right now. I mean, I think they could still be competitive for their division if their season started today. They still have time to address needs in the draft. They still have time to, you know, come across some free agents. You know, they still have time to, you know, to make other moves. And don't forget, they're getting Sean Lee back this year. Oft-injured but incredibly talented Sean Lee at linebacker. So, Super Bowl contender, maybe. But I think definitely right now, I look at them right now as the favorite in the NFC East.
All right, another area that I got to talk to you about, because we mentioned it earlier, but the signing of Darren McFadden. 7 years ago, that would have excited me, because he looked like the best running back. He looked like the best running back coming out of college when he played at Arkansas. He was a beast. I'm trying to figure out if he's going to be any contribution whatsoever, and my tendency is to want to give him the benefit of the doubt because he played on possibly the absolute worst football team and the worst organization in the league and was surrounded by losers from top to bottom, and that had to be have an impact on him. What do you think?
I agree. I do think that had an impact on him. Now, how much of an impact, that's really hard to gauge. When he got to Oakland, he was a Harley Davidson player on a moped team. Now he's probably more of a Honda player on a Honda team at this point, joining the Dallas Cowboys. It really boils down to this. It boils down to two things. Can he stay healthy, which he's never been able to do in his career, except for last year. And he didn't even start all 16 games, but he played in all 16 games. And can he take advantage of this wonderful offensive line that has been put in front of him? Does he have the running style that will allow him to take advantage of those big holes and let him get upfield? I think he has that ability. I think he has that running style. I think he's the type of back who will continue to move forward. He's not a guy who cuts back a lot or tries to go against the grain. He really does take what the offense gives him. So those two things leave me – those are the two things that I think have to happen for him to have any level of success. I think another thing that will help him is I don't think the Cowboys are going to shove him into a spot where he runs the football 25 times a game like they did with DeMarco Murray. I think they're going to use Joseph Randle. I think they're going to use Dunbar a little bit. I think they're going to use whatever player they draft in the draft in April. And, you know, McFadden's really only going to be relied upon to give them maybe 10 or 15 carries a game. I think a player like him who – actually, you know, thanks to his injuries, doesn't have many more carries than DeMarco Murray has after four seasons, and a back who is still in that age frame, 26, 27, because he came into the NFL so young that he can be successful. I think if he's used the right way, I think that he can give them something. I don't think their expectations are like he's going to come in and set the world on fire. I think the Cowboys' expectations are he's going to come in, give us what he can give him. Hopefully that's 4.5 yards a carry, 15 times a game, and that's going to help our offense move the football down the field.
I saw a question asked in an article today, one of many that I've been reading for the last couple of days, where someone made the comment that they thought that this year could be the most challenging year of Jason Garrett's tenure as the Cowboys head coach. What do you think?
I saw that article, too, and I thought it made some good points. I don't think that this is – I think this will be his most challenging year in terms of expectations. Coming off a 12-4 season, winning the division, winning a playoff game, I think there is that natural expectation among Cowboys fans and even among the front office that, okay, it's time to build on that and go a little further in the postseason. It's the same way fans felt after – the Cowboys won the division and won a playoff game in Wade Phillips' last full year in Dallas, and they fell flat on their face. I don't think that this team is going to fall flat on their face this year, but I do think, you know, they're going to have to deal with things that they didn't have to deal with last year. They're probably going to have to endure some injuries up front of the offensive line. No team goes through a season like the Cowboys did with so few injuries on its offensive line 2 years in a row. It's just not going to happen. They're gonna have to find a way to ride that out, which means they've got to find some good depth on their offensive line, especially at tackle, where they really have none right now. I think they're going to have to deal with some injuries in other areas. I think their schedule isn't really much easier than it was last year. I mean, they've got some really good teams on there. They've got some tough road games ahead of them. It's not a cakewalk schedule by any means. So there will be some challenging aspects to this season for Jason Garrett managing those expectations. But I think about his first full season in the NFL where there was basically no practice time during the season. Training camp was delayed because of the collective bargaining negotiations. And they pretty much had to put their team together on the fly over the course of a month and a half. I think that was his most challenging season. I don't think anything tops that, because that's just not an ideal environment for anybody when it comes to building a football team or trying to build up talent to make your football team successful.
So now we move on, and we still have this window of free agency, and we also have the draft to look forward to. The answer I give, by the way, when people ask me, what do I think about next year, tell me who's going to be on the roster, and I can start to tell you something. Because there's still so many holes to fill, and now so many starting positions on defense that are open, that it just really makes for a wide-open kind of a season. I mean, and the other thing is, players that the Cowboys lost may not have been the greatest players in the world, but there's no denying that that team had chemistry, good chemistry last year. And that's going to be hard to replace when you got to replace that many players. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think there's a certain level of truth to that. But, you know, a lot of NFL teams go through this year to year now. Free agency has created this environment. I mean, the Patriots won a Super Bowl. They'll probably turn over 12 to 15 players from last year's team, either through free agency, the draft, or just, you know, finding a player that's better than what they had. Every team has to deal with that. We had the Cowboys, and you made a 4-game improvement over last year. Obviously, there's a tendency among fans and among those that watch the team to want the Cowboys to keep that core together. But obviously, with the salary cap, it's simply not realistic to do that. So chemistry potentially could be an issue, especially on the defensive side of the football. I think they have the right guy and Ron Marinelli to lead that defense, and keeping him in Dallas was one of the best things they were able to do in the offseason, along with keeping Scott Linehan as the offensive coordinator. That's going to go a long way toward allowing the Cowboys to try to emulate some of that chemistry and some of that production in 2015.
All right, and then based on what holes there are to fill, do you have any idea where the priority is now in the draft? Before the Murray issue, you know, automatically you'd say it's got to be defense. It's got to be defense front, center, and back. But now with the running back opening that they have and not having a clear-cut answer for a replacement for Murray, you know, does that suddenly become the high priority?
Well, I think that they have three priorities coming into this draft. And I still think defensive line, whether it be defensive tackle or defensive end, is their number one priority. They haven't done a whole lot in free agency to address that line outside of signing Greg Hardy, and Hardy may potentially only be in Dallas for 1 year. So I still think there's a lot of room there to address that position if the right player falls to you in the first round. This is a draft where there's a lot of high-end, high-caliber defensive ends, and there's a lot of depth at defensive ends. So a good defensive end could drop to you in the second round that might give you first-round value, much like what the Cowboys thought they got out of DeMarcus Lawrence last year before he got hurt. I think cornerback is a need. I think losing Sterling Moore hurts them a little bit. They really still only have three good corners, in my opinion, and they could definitely use somebody coming in to help them in that position. And I think running back is a need. I don't necessarily think running back is their number one need, but I think it's a need that they're going to look very hard at. Jerry Jones said today they're going to have most of the top running backs come to Valley Ranch as part of their 30 visits on campus. So they're going to spend a lot of time looking at that position. And this is not a fantastic running back draft. Really, Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley are pretty much the only two backs that are thought of as first-round talents. And Gurley could slip into the second round because he has the ACL rehab that he's doing right now. But there are some other good backs in this draft that could be had in the third, fourth round. Amir Abdullah from Nebraska comes immediately to mind. He's going to be a player the Cowboys are going to have in. So they don't necessarily have to spend a first-round pick to address the position. But I fully expect that they'll use one of their first three picks, first, second, or third round, to address those three particular positions. In what order that happens, I don't know. But I think those are the three positions they're going to strive to address the most in this draft.
And then, you know, obviously, they have got to find a way to get Dez into workouts. And then what about the quarterback? Do they not have to draft quarterback this year?
Well, they don't have to.
We know that really all these things we've talked about, we've talked for over 40 minutes now, but we all know that one false move by Tony Romo and this season's done. It doesn't matter what else they do.
That's very true.
They got nobody behind him that anybody can depend on. And I think the season is completely over if Tony Romo trips and, you know, spasms up the wrong way. So, I mean, do they not have to draft a quarterback this year?
Personally, I adopt the Ron Wolf philosophy when it comes to quarterbacks. The former Green Bay Packers general manager, the guy who famously traded a second-round pick to get Brett Favre away from the Atlanta Falcons. Wolf's philosophy was the quarterback position is the most important position on the field, and if a quarterback falls to me that I think has talent and I think has ability and can help me, I'm going to pick him, even if I have Brett Favre, even if I have Aaron Rodgers, even if I have Don Majkowski. And over the course of Favre's career, the Packers drafted 7 or 8 quarterbacks, and some of them turned out to be really good. Aaron Brooks, Mark Brunell, Matt Flynn, I mean, 4 or 5 guys that have gone on to be starters. Matt Hasselbeck also comes to mind. If the right guy's there on the board, I don't see why the Cowboys don't pull the trigger. They're going to have Bryce Petty come in this week. I think that visit may have already taken place. He's a guy that is starting to get some traction on draft boards and could be had in the third or fourth round. This isn't a great quarterback draft, to be perfectly honest with you. There's a significant drop after Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota. You don't necessarily have to spend a first-round pick to get a first-round talent. You just have to pick the right type of quarterback at the right time. If I'm the Cowboys, that's the type of player I'm looking at. I'm looking at a guy who can give me that can fit into my system. You know, you've committed to Jason Garrett long-term now because he just got a big extension. So you know what type of offense you're going to have the next several years. You know what type of scheme you're going to play, and you know what quarterback is going to give that to you. If the right quarterback drops to you in the third or fourth round, then, yeah, I say pull the trigger because you're absolutely right. One bad hit to Tony Romo, and it's all over with. And Brandon Whedon is like, you know, really shouldn't be on the roster based on what we saw last year, to be honest with you.
Well, and just to say, you know how I feel about Kyle Orton, who I was not a to be real kind, I was not a big fan of and never have been. But Kyle Orton looks like Peyton Manning next to Brandon Wheaton.
You never know what you have until it's gone or until it's retired.
But let me just to assure you, I'm not sorry that he's gone. Okay, just saying. Because I don't think he would have done anything for the Cowboys if Romo had gone down. He didn't when he did play. So, anyway, that's just my issue. All right, so what happens in the next few days on RattlinHumpSports.com?
Well, in the next couple of days, we'll have our seven-round mock draft up. This is where I actually do several different scenarios on what the Cowboys could take over a seven-round draft. There's a great draft software out there that allows you to do exactly that. It allows you to use a big board from an actual reputable scouting site called Optimum Scouting. And you can kind of – it takes – you know, when you do these mock drafts for the first round, it's really about your opinion. These scenarios are really about what the board gives you when you come on the clock, and then you have to decide, do I take the best player available? Do I take my need? Do I take the best player available within reason? So we did all these different scenarios and have some interesting selections. It's the first one we've done in about a month, and there are some very interesting players out there. And then there's another piece that I'll be working on probably in the next few days about why the Cowboys should not enter into this Adrian Peterson derby that appears that Ben Dagra, his agent, is so valiantly trying to create.
And by the way, the only reason that I didn't bring that up is because I don't know how they could possibly do this with their cap situation, with the fact that Adrian Peterson is going to require a trade. It's not going to be a situation where they give him money. They're going to have to give up something to get then pay him. I just don't see it being any possibility whatsoever that AP ends up with the Dallas Cowboys.
I don't think there is either, but it's Jerry, and it's a big, shiny thing, and if you throw it in front of his face enough times, he might just go ahead and say, screw it, redo Romo's contract, let's get him.
You make a really good point there, and so far – whoever it is that's, bound and gagged him and stuffed him in the trunk has done a really good job for the last couple of years. So maybe they can continue to keep him under control and keep him from being his own worst enemy there.
Well, it's very clear that Stephen Jones has a great deal of sway over the pocketbook right now. Yahoo Sports did a nice piece on that just after, I think, Murray signed with Philadelphia and kind of broke down the fact that, Stephen Jones is really the guy who's driving this new era of fiscal responsibility for the Cowboys. Jerry is still the GM and he is still calling the shots, but he really is leaning quite a bit on Stephen and to a lesser degree Jason Garrett too. When it comes to do we really need to spend X amount on X guy or can we find other ways to spend our money that will make our football team better? Jerry has been less about the flashy things in the last couple of years, but a potential Hall of Fame running back trying to get out of Minnesota, trying to get a new start. Maybe that's the one thing that makes Jerry Jones go cap space be damned.
Yes, we've seen it before, so we'll hold our breath and see what happens, but I just can't believe that it'll possibly come to happen. Matthew, great to talk to you as always. Be sure and read Matthew's stuff on rattlinghumsports.com on a daily basis, and we'll be talking to you down the line, okay?
Absolutely, Brian. Thanks a lot.
Sounds great, and great to talk to you again. Matthew Poston's covering the Cowboys for rattlinghumsports.com. I'm Brian Houston. You can hear this and other podcasts on rattlinghumsports.com. Thanks very much for listening, and we will talk to you next time.